Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Michelle with 16 years of sobriety.
From Fresno, but I decided I didn't need to introduce myself twice. So.
Oh, I'm loud enough. You probably don't even need that. I wasn't nervous tonight, so we pulled into the parking lot, and then I saw everybody getting out of their cars, and then I walked in here, and I wanted to vomit. So I'm a little nervous. What it was like for me, I didn't grow up in an alcoholic home. I had a single parent, raised three kids. My mother is an active alcoholic, but I saw her, you know, every other weekend. Grandparents are alcoholics, they died of alcoholism. I just didn't live in it. I didn't know what alcoholics were. I didn't know what that was, you know. I do know that my first drink that I can remember was when I was 14. I have a tattoo to remind me of it every day. Because that night we got drunk and we drew out a tattoo and I got a tattoo. And so that's the first recollection. I know I drank before then, but I don't remember. I was a blackout drinker, so I don't remember a lot of things that I did. And at first it was kind of fun. You know, I was a wallflower. I was real shy. I didn't talk to people. I didn't have a lot of friends. I was the smart kid. And people really didn't talk to me. I was kind of nerdy, you know. So when I drank, it made me fit in. I could talk to people. I could have conversations. I could be whatever you wanted me to be. And I could be older than I was. And I could, you know, I could be whatever I wanted to be. I didn't know how to do that sober, you know. So when I started drinking, I started fitting in with the cool kids, whatever the cool kids were back then, you know. And I won't tell you how old I was. Anyway. You know, so I drank to fit in with the kids. I drank to be able to be a part of. I drank to be tougher than. I drank to be cuter than. I drank to be, you know, better than. You know, and I really wasn't. I just, you know, that was the only way I knew how to deal with people. People scared me. Today, they don't scare me as much as make me nervous, you know. But, and it went on for quite a few years. I did okay. I didn't get in too much trouble. I got arrested once when I was 17 because I was drunk and passed out on the beach, and they put me in a holding cell, called my dad, and said, hey, you come pick her up, we won't put it on our record. My dad picked me up and got in the van, and my dad smacked me in the back of the head, called me a dumb shit, and that's the last time we ever talked about it. And that was like the only trouble I really got into, and, you know, until I started getting older. And when I got older, drinking became an absolute way of life. You know, I didn't know how to do life without drinking. I took bottles to work with me. I did, you know. I'd call my brother at 3 o'clock in the morning because I can't find my car. I parked it somewhere in Hollywood, and I went to one bar and ended up in another bar, and I couldn't find my car, and I did that several times, and finally he told me not to do it anymore, so I finally started calling the cab company. I'd eventually find my car, usually a few days later, and usually with a couple of broken windows or something in it, you know, but I still had the car. And it went on for a long time. I got married the first time when I was 19, and I was drunk the night I got married, so I don't remember any of it. That's pretty much how the whole relationship went. When I turned 23, he gave me an ultimatum and said that either I was going to quit drinking or, you know, keep our marriage. And I decided I was going to keep drinking and he could go away. So I packed up all my stuff in my little car and I took off and never to see him again. I chose to drink over a relationship. I had some things happen to me during that time frame from the time I was 23 to 25. I don't share it in an open meeting, and if you're offended by that, call your sponsor. I'm sure they can help you get through it. I had some things happen to me during a 2-year period from that time I got that divorce that were kind of devastating to me, and I couldn't figure out how to get through them, so I tried to drink myself to death for a year and a half. I wanted to die. I didn't want to live anymore. I wanted to drink. I just wanted to drink by committing suicide, or commit suicide by drinking, because I couldn't do it any other way. That was the only way I knew to do it, so I was going to try to drink myself to death. My 25th birthday, I ended up in Las Vegas, and I spent 3 days in Las Vegas in a blackout. I don't know where I was at. who I was with, what I did, where I went. All I know is 3 days later I came to in the same clothes on a payphone, and a security guard standing next to me trying to get money to get home. The friends I went with spent a day and a half looking for me, couldn't find me, so they left me there. They took my purse. I had no wallet, no ID. I had nothing. I finally got a hold of my mom, and my mom sent me enough money for a bus ticket, a hamburger, a pack of cigarettes, and a Pepsi. I had about 75 cents left when I was done. I spent 10 hours on a bus heading back to Escondido to figure out what I was going to do with the rest of my life. When I got back to Escondido, I called my mom and let her know I made it safe. Now, mind you, my mother's been my enabler through this whole process. My mom was always the one that stayed with me. Everybody else had cut me out of their life. My mom was my enabler. And that day, I called my mom and told her I made it home safely, and my mom said, don't call me again until you get help. I said, Mom, where do I go for help? I don't know. I've never heard of anything. You know, my mom said, call Alcoholics Anonymous, and she gave me an 800 number. So I called Alcoholics Anonymous, and they sent me to a meeting. I guess it was about 2 days later. I went to a meeting, and I walked in, and I ended up going to L.A., and I went to a meeting up in L.A., and walked into the Triangle Club in Pomona, and this lady named Sue P. stood up and goes, you must be a newcomer, and threw me in this chair where I sat for 30 days. And I was so scared of this woman that she was, like, intimidating, and she was just this little lady, you know, that she was very intimidating. She looked ginormous to me. She put me in that chair, and that's where I sat for 30 days. I sat in the room, and the first time that someone had me introduce myself, I said I was an alcoholic, but I didn't believe it, you know, but I said it because I wanted to fit in with everybody. Everybody said, I'm an alcoholic, so Michelle's going to say it too, you know. And I sat in that room for 30 days in the same seat at every meeting I went to. You know, and I just went through that process for a little while, and I finally started to get involved a little bit, trying to talk to people, trying to be something besides, you know, besides a dirtbag is what I was. You know, that's really, to me, that's what I was, you know. So I stuck around the rooms, and I started meeting people, started talking to people, I started getting involved. And at the Triangle Club, we had coffee cups, we had ashtrays, we didn't have ash cans, we actually had ashtrays outside that we cleaned up. We actually had coffee cups that had to be washed, we had a snack bar that had to be worked. And so the only way for me to stay and get involved and not go walk past the liquor store was to stay and wash coffee cups, and was to wash ashtrays, was to pick up cigarette butts, to sweep the parking lot. And I did that for a little while. But what I didn't tell you is that in that first 30 days, a couple days into sobriety, I was without a home. I had no place to live. And I thought every woman in the room was going to take my money, my man, my car, and my job. Do you know what I had when I walked in this room? I had a grocery bag with a change of clothes in it. But I really thought you were going to take all that from me. I didn't have anything for you to take. I thought you were going to take it. But 2 days into sobriety, a couple days into sobriety, I didn't have a place to live. This old man had 14 years sober. He was about 80 years old, and he was the crossiest, meanest, grumpiest old man I'd ever met in my life. He said, you can sleep on my couch for 30 days until you get on your feet, as long as you stay sober. So I slept on this man's couch for 30 days. I got a job at Taco Bell. I got a job at Burger King, and I worked both jobs to save money. 30 days later, I found a place for some woman in San Dimas who had a garage converted to a room that she rented out. And I rented that room for her. That was the first time I had lived in a room by myself. You know, I really wasn't living on my own because I was a family. I had access to the house, you know. But that's where I lived. And I started going to adult school. I rode a 10 speed everywhere because just before I came in there, I threw the rod in my car because I thought it was cool not to spend money to put oil in my car. I wanted to spend it on booze. You know, so I threw a rod in my car and I sold my car for $360 and I drank all that money away. So I ended up getting a 10 speed and I rode a 10 speed everywhere and I was content with that. At 6 months sober, I was served divorce papers for my first husband. I knew it was coming, but for some reason when I got those papers, it was an absolute shock and I fell apart. You know, but I knew the divorce was coming. I left him, you know. So I get these divorce papers and I start freaking out. I'm like, I'm going to go drink over this. You know, this is going to make me drink. So I start walking to the Triangle Club from where I lived at. And I lived about 3 or 4 miles away. So I start walking, and there's liquor stores all over the place. If anybody's ever been to Pomona, San Dimas area, there's liquor stores everywhere you go. I shit you not, that every single liquor store was chained up walking. This is a God thing. I know that now. I didn't know that then. I go walking by, every liquor store is chained up. Every single one of them. I get over to the Triangle Club. And I had these divorce papers in my hand. I didn't even know what to do with them. You know, I really was. I didn't know what to do. And I walk in there, and the guy that's working the counter, he looks at me, and he's like, "You want a drink, don't you?" I go, "Really, really bad." He gave me a Pepsi. You know, I'm like, "Okay, you suck." But you know, he helped me. And I hung out at that Triangle Club all day long. I sat back at the couch where I should go play pool, and I sat. You know, when people came in and out of meetings, I sat through meetings. That day, I stayed sober, and that kept me. You know, that kept me coming back there because someone gave. You know, someone gave. A little bit about, you know, a little shit about me that I say, you know. So I started getting more involved, and I finally got a sponsor, and I thought I'd get a sponsor. I was 25 when I came into this program, okay? So I thought I'd get a sponsor that was the same age as me because then we could relate to each other. Yeah, that didn't work out very well. But I do have to say that she did guide me through the first three steps. Where I was able to, you know, work 1, 2, 3, and I was able to somewhat find a higher power, and I'll get into that one in a little bit. So where I started getting into the fourth step, and I couldn't work with her, I didn't trust her, so I wasn't going to tell her anything, you know. If I did anything, I was going to BS my way through it, you know. So I had her for a little while. She got me involved in doing the dances, so they had dances there once a month, and she got me into doing all the things in there. Besides just cleaning coffee cups and washing ashtrays, you know. And she got me into doing things. I started listening to the other women and trying to relate to them. And like I said, I didn't like women when I got here. And I still didn't at that point, but I knew that I wanted to stay sober at this point, and I knew that I needed to do something. You know, so I started watching other women, and then I finally, Sue P, who happened to be the woman who threw me in the chair my first 30 days, I ended up asking her to be my sponsor, and she ended up guiding me and walking me through the steps, and I went through the steps with her, and my only issue with that was I never got fully honest with her when I did my fifth step. I was afraid to. And she knew it, and she let me do what I needed to do because she couldn't make me do it, you know. So I went through and I did that. A year into sobriety, I moved, I came back down. I got into another relationship and I moved back to San Diego. Just at a year sober, I joined the Navy. I thought I'd do something really cool with my life and make my dad super proud of me, and I joined the Navy. They know why, you know, I didn't have anything else. Why not, you know? And I got into another relationship, and at 2 years and 4 days sober, I drank again. And I drank because I never got on that fifth step. I carried that shame and that guilt around with me, and I ended up drinking over it. February 2nd, 1997 was the last time I drank. Well, okay, let me rephrase it. I was drunk that night. And the next day I went to a meeting and I was still drunk. So February 4th is the day I celebrate my birthday because I didn't draw sober breath on the 3rd. I was still drunk. I think I still had aftermath, you know. But the shame and the guilt that I felt and that I carried around, I couldn't deal with it. And I got drunk over it. And let me tell you, it wasn't any different than it was when I first came in. It was exactly the same. I picked up right where I left off at. I blacked out and I should have went to the hospital. The girls that were in the barracks with me, because I was in A school at this time. The girls that were in A school with me put bubble gum in my door so they could check on me all night long. They got in trouble for that. But they stuck up for me. They weren't going to back down. They stuck up for me because I could have died that night, they said. I don't know if I could have or not. I was in blackout. I was drunk. I don't know. You know? But I know the next day I went into my class and my instructor pulled me aside and said, "Hey, what's going on?" I said, "I'm an alcoholic and I drank last night." Instead of saying I'm a recovering alcoholic, I just said I was an alcoholic and I drank last night. And he looked at me and he's like, "This is what I should do." She goes, "But I'm going to let you go back to your barracks room, give you 24 hours, fix yourself, take care of your stuff, come back tomorrow, act like this didn't happen." That man saved my career, you know. I'm grateful for that man. Because if he wouldn't have done what he did, and he wasn't in the program, he wasn't an alcoholic, you know, but he just knew I had an issue and I needed to fix it. So I went back to my barracks room, went to a couple meetings, and I've been sober since that day. Hasn't been all peaches and cream in the last 16 years. I've been through my ups and downs. I've been through divorces. I've been through marriages in this program. You know, but the women in these rooms help walk me through the majority of it. You know, when I came back in, I made a pact that I was going to put myself out there and make myself available and let people know who I was. So, you know, I every meeting I went to, I introduced myself. And I ended up getting stationed in Washington, and I knew nobody up there. I was terrified. My grandmother from my stepfather's side of the family lived up there. That was the only person I knew in Washington. And I went there, and the first meeting I went to, I stood at the door, and I introduced myself to every woman that walked in the door because I was terrified, and I didn't want to drink. I ended up meeting a woman named Diane, who later on became my sponsor. And she was the first woman in recovery that I ever got fully honest with, and it took me about 3 years to do that. And if I say something that offends you, again, please call your sponsor, okay? Because I walked in, I hadn't fully gotten honest with my fifth step, and finally I had enough, and enough was enough, and I ended up in my car at her house. I don't know how I got there. I just know I made it there. This is how I know God works in my life, because I really don't know how I made it there. I walked in, I walked to her front door, I didn't even knock, I flung the front door open, I took my notebook and I threw it at her, and I said, here the fuck it is. She was about fucking fine. That's all she said about it. You know, and then we walked through it, and we walked through that stuff, and I actually became stronger from that, because I was able to cry, and I was able to let go, and I was able to, you know, to release all that I had been carrying around for so long. We went outside, we threw it in the burn barrel, and we burned it, and I watched the ashes fly up until they disappeared. That was the most, I don't even know how to describe it. You know, it was the most invigorating feeling ever, because it was just like this big release of air went out, and just all the stress and everything just kind of faded away. You know, that stuff I carried for so long that I was embarrassed over, that I was ashamed of, that I did. I am who I am, and I did what I did. I can't change it. The only thing I can do is not do those things again, you know. During the time I was in Washington, I had to have surgery. I was down for 6 weeks. And women, this is how the program works. This is how women work in this program, okay? We had a Tuesday night step study meeting. I couldn't go to a meeting. I was bedridden for 6 weeks. They moved that woman's step study meeting to my house for 6 weeks. They kept me sober for those 6 weeks. My sponsor, Diane, came over every day to make sure that I would took my pills, because I refused to take them because they were narcotics. And I said before, my mom's an alcoholic, she's an alcoholic pill popper, so I didn't want to be the alcoholic pill popper. And so I was afraid to take them, and I made myself sick not taking the pain pills. So my sponsor came over every day, and she didn't count my pills or anything like that. She came over just to make sure I was taking them. She didn't live that far away. Backtrack just a little bit, which I forgot. The second time around, 9 months sober, I had an uncle who hung himself in prison because of this disease. And my mom asked me to speak at his funeral because I had been sober. And I wrote a poem, and I stood up at his funeral, and it basically talked about the purpose of my life. And the last thing I said is I didn't want my disease to take me where it took my uncle. He didn't know how to live outside the walls of jail. He didn't know how to live without drugs and alcohol. He didn't know how to do it, and I didn't want to end up like that. But the women in these rooms are the ones who helped me walk through that and get through that without falling apart. I always took, one thing I always did too, when I went to family functions and things like that, I always took a woman in recovery with me, because none of my family's in recovery on that side of the family. Nobody's in recovery, you know. I come from Irish Catholic alcoholics, and my mother's an Irish Catholic alcoholic converted to Christianity. So she's all messed up. I love my mother to death. She's a great woman. She's just an alcoholic, you know. I lost my train of thought after that. I've learned in these rooms, with the, being close with the women, I wholeheartedly believe women's the women, men's the men, and I believe that's what's going to save your ass. And that's how I believe. You don't have to think how I think, you know. Everybody's an individual. But I know that the women in these rooms have saved my ass on several occasions when I've gone through divorces, and I've gone through deaths, and I've gone through, you know, issues at work. You know, I said before I joined the Navy, I've been in the Navy now for 17 years. It's the longest I've ever had a job. I couldn't keep a job for a very long time because they didn't like me drinking on the job, you know. But the meaning to that for me is not to brag that I'm in the Navy. It is, as an alcoholic, they allow me to work on billion-dollar aircraft, you know? They trust me to work on billion-dollar aircraft, you know? But the other side of that is I've been successful. I am a female airplane mechanic, and I've been able to work my way up. The women in these rooms help me stay strong through that. I still go through issues with being treated less than because I am a female, but I'm a lot tougher than they are. I go home and cry about it. I don't let them see me cry about it. They will not see me cry, you know. It's funny that it still happens nowadays. You know, 2014 and we still have that issue, you know. But through deployment and through different things, I'm going to keep trying to get that if I don't move it. The one thing that I've done right every single day is I haven't picked up a drink, and I learned that in here. I may not work a perfect program. I may not walk a perfect life. I may not be the perfect friend, a perfect wife, a perfect daughter, a perfect anything. The one thing I do right every day is I don't pick up a drink no matter what. I don't care if my ass is falling off. I don't drink. If I want to drink, I feel like I want to drink, I think I want to drink, I talk to another alcoholic about it. I say something. Because you know what? I don't want to die from this. I want to die sober, you know? I don't want to die anymore. I wanted to die when I got here. You know, today I want to live. My life today is amazing, you know? 6 years ago, I went through some issues with some friends, and they didn't like a decision I made. So I lost a lot of my friends. That's okay, though, because I figured out who my real friends really were. But I didn't drink over it and managed to still stay sober. I walked away from the program for a little while because of it. You know what I found out happens when you do that? You are miserable as all get out. Because I was mean, I was nasty, you know? I get stuck in all behaviors. So I started coming back to the program more, going to meetings a little bit more. Not quite as much as I'd like to right now. A lot of things, our life is super full and, you know, God works in a serious way. When I got here, I didn't want to hear about God. Because when I got sober, I went back to a church that I went to when I was a teenager, and I told them I was an alcoholic, and I wanted to go back, you know, get back into the church, and they pretty much told me to go screw myself. So I said, okay, go screw yourself too, and I went back to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And I struggled with the God thing for a long time. I finally got to a point where I understood what it meant, the difference between religion and spirituality. It took me a while to understand, and I understand what that means today. They're two separate things. A few years ago, my spiritual journey was changing, and my current husband and I started. He was going to this church, asked if I wanted to go, and I went with him, and I found a different path. You know, not that we go to church every single day, every single Sunday, you know, but we do go, and I have a better understanding of my spiritual path. You know, I have a better understanding of my higher power. That higher power is what kept me halfway sane, you know. I don't want it to be completely sane because then this is miserable. You know, I like being kind of sane. But, you know, I learned in the room that my concept and my spirituality is going to continue to grow as I grow in recovery. So what I have right now is not going to be what I'm going to have a year from now or 2 years from now. It's going to change and grow, and it's going to develop into something more. I don't know this again. But today I have an understanding of a higher power, and I know that the higher power works in my life because, you know, I'm blessed today. When I got here, I had nothing. Mickey D says, I got here, I was broke, busted, and disgusted. You know, today I'm not broke, busted, and disgusted. You know, I learned in these, you know, walking through the stuff in these rooms, you know, that economic insecurity, all those promises that are there, those things, I don't have those today. Don't get me wrong, I still get nervous about things. I still get fearful of things. But I don't have them like I did when I got here. You know, God has always made sure my needs were met. You know, in the last few years, my life has changed drastically, and it's been for the better. I don't think I've been as happy as I've been in the last few years as I have been before then. Does that make any sense to them? Okay. myself. And it's just because my life has changed and grown, but it's also because I've learned more about myself. I spent 9 months on cruise, not being able to go to a meeting. I don't recommend that, please. You know, but I learned how to work my program in different ways, and I learned how to rely on my higher power more that way. And I learned that in these rooms from people who've been in the service in these rooms and from people who, you know, can't always make meetings. I know for me that meetings are what keep me sane, and when I don't make meetings, I get crazy. I get stuck in my head and I start acting out on all behaviors. And I don't like that. I don't like being that person. I like to be that happy person. I like to enjoy my life, and I don't like feeling miserable. But my life is good today, you know. I don't know how much else to tell you that this program works. I'm living proof. So is every other person sitting in this room that stays sober. And, you know, it works. You just have to work it. One thing I've always heard is, and I try to say it too, is if you're new in here, find someone you relate to, grab a hold of their belt loop, and they'll let go. Because you're going to be in the ride for your life, you know. When I first moved to Hanford, I moved out here in 2005, and I first moved to Hanford, I found a woman I couldn't stand, and I asked her to be my sponsor. She's no longer my sponsor. I don't recommend doing that. I do have to say that she did walk me through the 12 steps. She walked me through all 12 steps. Any other area in there didn't work for me, but she did walk me through the 12 steps, and that's exactly what a sponsor is supposed to do, is walk me through the 12 steps. She did her job. I haven't had a sponsor in 3 years, and that's quite, it's been by choice, and that's because of some of the issues that I've had, and I've moved to a new area, and I just haven't found that right person yet. I do have female friends in the program that I do talk to and I share some things with, but those are my issues, that's what I deal with today, those are my Gucci problems today. And I've heard that said in here lots of times, you know, my problems are Gucci today. Sometimes I have major episodes, but I don't really have major episodes anymore, you know. I freak out once in a while, you know, but I blame it on hormones. Sometimes it's just me stuck in here. When I get in here is when I get really messed up, and that's when I need to stop and rethink things, and that's when I need to pray, and that's when I need to break up a big book, when I need to go to a meeting. I know those things because the people in these rooms taught me that. I didn't learn that on my own. I didn't learn that walking in here off the street. I know exactly what to do. I learned it listening in here, you know. You listen to the similarities, not the differences, and that's what's going to make a difference for you. I know it did for me. This program saved my ass. I should have been dead in the gutter somewhere. You know, I don't know how much more I can tell you, because, you know, that's my story, and there's a big chunk of it I don't share enough in meetings, you know, because I could go on for about another hour, you know. But, you know, if you're new, seriously, find somebody. You know, pick up the phone before you pick up a drink. You know, because this disease is deadly and it will kill you. I love this program. I wouldn't trade my life. I wouldn't trade a minute of my life for it. You know, you hear the old cliche that I wouldn't trade my worst day sober for my best day drinking. I really wouldn't. That's because I probably don't remember my best day drinking, you know, but still, you know, I don't. My worst day sober is much better than what it was when I was out there. You know, so if you're new, stick around. Okay, my name's Michelle. I'm just going to stay.
I work on fighter jets. Yes. Right at this moment, no, because I do not have a sponsor, and in order for me to sponsor, I must have a sponsor. So once I get a sponsor, yes. Yeah, no.
How many times have you gone through the steps?
Probably 8 or 9 times. Huh? You never stop. There's always something new.